Well, welcome again, and it's great to see everyone here as we continue in our mission at answering the questions and comments that you've raised about the problem with Christianity. The problem with Christianity is the bad behaviour of Christians. This was one of the issues that you raised for us when we were surveying you, and there were a whole series of comments to do with this question and this idea. Christianity has a 2,000-year history, and much could be said about the bad behaviour of Christians over 2,000 years and in many different countries. I want to try to break it down today into three areas that I want to look at. The first one is the bad behaviour of Christians for which there is no excuse. The second one is the bad behaviour of Christians, and I'm going to ask you to please have a look at the context about that. And then finally, the bad behaviour and Jesus. So they're the three points that I want to look at today. So let's look at this first one, the bad behaviour of Christians for which there is no excuse. It's been to the shame of the church, but in many ways it is right and appropriate that the behaviour of priests in their sexual misconduct with children has been exposed. That has brought great shame on the church and on Christians, as the media love to whip up this story, they don't really have to whip it up too much because it's there. For the young children who were entrusted into the care of these priests, there is no excuse for what they did to them. For when it was made known to the bishops and the leaders of the church in charge, when they found out about this situation, just to simply move that priest to another place where he would do it again, there is no excuse for that. There is no excuse for that. The damage, the confusion, the abuse of trust, the ruined lives that have resulted from that action, there is no excuse. It is wicked behaviour. And if you have suffered from that, or maybe your parents have suffered from it, I just want to apologise and say I am deeply, deeply sorry that the Christian church has allowed this to happen to you. In fact, the Christian church has done more than just allowed it. At some points, they've been instrumental in bringing that upon you. It is evil behaviour, and compensation must be made, regardless of the cost to the church. Even if it sends it completely bankrupt, compensation must be made, and no excuse must ever be given. I also want to talk about the various persecutions that the churches have had over the over 2,000 years, where people of other religions, for various reasons, have been persecuted. And they have been persecuted, sometimes treated very badly. That is not the Christian way. There is no excuse for that type of behaviour. We shouldn't try to excuse it. And again, I want to apologise as best I can for the church's behaviour in doing that. For the times that the church and the leaders in the church have use their position to have power over people, to be able to manipulate people, to be able to get what they want and to organise things the way they want it, and that they've trampled people underfoot. There's no excuse for that. Those things have happened in history, and Christians can't come up and just say, well, it's okay to trample on people like that. No, it's not. It's not. And I'm not trying to give an excuse for that wicked behaviour, that abuse of power. In reading some of the comments, there were a few there which spoke about people whose parents had been involved in ministry, involved in the church in some way, and there had been fights and power plays and sinful greed between people within the church, so that their parents had suffered, and they'd even suffered divorce within their family as a result of the behaviour of people in the church, of their wicked behaviour. You may be here. That, I hope you have been able to come today. I want to say I am so sorry that you as a young person were caught up in that terrible behaviour, in that ungodly, godless, wicked behaviour, where people were scheming, where people were speaking about your parents, that ultimately it seems has led to you being disillusioned with Christianity completely. There's no excuse for that type of behaviour. If you've suffered that way, if you're hurt in that way, I am sorry and I apologise that that's happened. It may be that you've been the victim of a Christian who has been judgmental to you. What I mean by that is that you know this Christian and they're actually doing the same types of things that you do. And yet they look down on you. They look down on you because they go to church. They look down on you because they're involved in church in some way. And they make these comments about them being superior to you and the bad things that you do, even though they're actually doing the same types of things. There is no excuse for that. In fact, Jesus strongly condemns that type of behaviour, and there is no excuse. They can't say, well, I've been forgiven, or I'm a Christian, or I'm washed in the blood of the Lamb. Hypocrisy never can be excused. And if you've suffered from that, if you've been turned off by it, if you feel that, you know, this bloke's doing this and yet he's looking down on me, again, I want to apologise for that behaviour. These things have happened in the church, this abuse of children, these persecutions, these abuse of power, families tearing each other apart in the church and judgmentalism. These things happen. I'm going to ask you to forgive us. I don't know if you can. I hope that maybe one day as you get to know some Christians in another context or something that you can see the good side. I don't know if that is possible with you. But as best as I can, I want to apologise for the abuse and hurt without reservation for what Christians have done to you. That's my first point. That some behaviour of Christians is without excuse. And as Christians, we need to be prepared to admit that. Some things we shouldn't try to excuse, we just need to confess our sins publicly. I want to move to my second point now. And this is the bad behaviour of Christians. And in this case, it's a bit different. It's not maybe what's happened to you personally so much. This is the bad behaviour of Christians where I want to ask you and invite you to find out a bit more about the context of that situation. So it's a bit different to the first group where we can say nothing, just confess our sins. In this case, it's actually the types of things that are assumed within our society, because there are many beliefs in our society where it's just assumed this is the bad behaviour of Christians. Some examples would be the Crusades or the burning of witches, where there's an assumed knowledge within our society, within our culture. If you actually ask people for details, they wouldn't be able to give you the details like with the first group that I was saying, where it was my parents who were involved in this and it was my family that got ripped apart. It's not like that. This is more just the assumed knowledge of our society. And I want us to look at the Crusades and witches in particular now. And my point that I want to make with them is that it's not quite as simple. And I'm just going to ask you to please have a look at both sides of what was happening to get a bigger picture. If we look at the Crusades, how is it often presented? Well, the way it's presented to me when I hear people speak it is they'll just use it as a one-off line. You're a Christian, what about the Crusades? Maybe you've heard that as well. The idea is that the world was at peace and then militant Christianity in hostility just came in and brought trouble to the world. And it's proof that Christianity is a violent religion. But I want to ask you to please consider the context in which it happened. I was speaking to a young lady who had actually studied history here, and she'd just finished studying the Crusades, and I said to her, what happened before the Crusades? She said, I don't know. I said, but you've just finished studying here at university. Can you tell me what happened before? And she said, we didn't do that. Now, I'm hoping that she is in no way representative of what's happening here. But generally, I have found that when I ask people what happened before the First Crusade, they don't know. Well, something happened. Something actually happened for 463 years. It was the Islamic Jihad. The Islamic Empire conquered and subjugated Christians, Jews, animists, Zoroastrians, Hindus, and everyone. And you actually cannot understand the First Crusade without understanding this history. I'd just like for us to read. Can we go back, please, Tom? Go back. I mustn't have put these in the right order. I'm not sure. Keep going. Oh, there, stop there. We need to understand the world in which we live. And I just want to pull this out because sometimes people have come to conclusions about Christianity, and I want to invite you on this case to look into the evidence. This is a man writing a history on jihad in Europe, and he's writing before the events of September the 11th, 2001. So it's not that it's a big issue. Most people actually didn't even care about it back then, if you can remember. And he says, the jihad, the Islamic so-called holy war, has been a fact of life in Europe, Asia, Africa, and the Near and Middle East for 1300 years. But this is the first history of the Muslim wars in Europe ever to be published. Hundreds of books, however, have appeared on its Christian counterpart, the Crusades, to which the jihad is often compared, although they lasted less than 200 years, and unlike the jihad, which is universal, were largely but not completely confined to the Holy Land. Moreover, the Crusades have been over for more than 700 years, while the jihad is still going on in the world. The jihad has been the most unrecorded and disregarded major event of history. It has in fact been largely ignored. For instance, the Encyclopedia Britannica gives the Crusades 80 times more space than the jihad. In the New South Wales State Library, where I did part of my research in Australia, there were 180 entries listed in the catalogue cards for the Crusades, but only two for the jihad. The jihad has been largely bypassed by Western historians, and this book is an attempt to right the situation, for the jihad has affected the lives and continues to do so of far, far more people and regions in the world than the long extinct Crusades ever did. Now, I just wanted to bring that up because the effect that that has for our culture is that people are familiar with the idea of Crusades. It's just familiar, it's just part of the air we breathe. But we have almost no understanding of what actually happened before them. And that actually leads to unbalance. It doesn't lead to having a correct understanding. At the popular level, it means that you can make very wrong decisions because you're not in a position to see what all of the facts are. And what I'm asking you to do is, on this issue of the Crusades, to actually find out what was happening at that time. Please hear me though, I'm not trying to say that they were right. I'm not trying to excuse them and say, yes, we should have had those Crusades. But what I am saying is that there's far more to the story than what is usually presented. What about with witches? The way that this is presented is that, and again, this is an assumption in our culture where people will just say, Christians burn witches, and you may have heard that yourself. And the assumption that goes with it is that Christianity incites hatred against witches, that in a sense that witches were just a natural part of the world, and they were just around, and then Christianity's come and brought about a persecution against them and made life very hard for them. But it's actually far more than that. It's more than that. And again, I want you to look at the other side, because witches are actually killed and have been killed in all cultures around the world, regardless of the religion. You see, if you believe in magic, if you believe that the witch has power, then you're actually afraid of the witch. You may go to the witch for help if you believe that they can help you in some way. But when something goes wrong, Well, who has the power? It's the witch. And so witches are often being killed in our world today, not by Christians, but by people who believe in magic. And so in India, there's around 200 witches a year are being killed, not by Christians, but by the people in India who believe in magic. In fact, some secular governments in Africa are taking drastic steps at the moment, really in opposition to witchcraft. Why? Well, this is because there are some witches over there in Africa, Central Africa, who abduct, kill and dismember albinos, Africans. And they sell their body parts because these are believed to be magical. And it's actually a significant problem. And it's not the Christians who are, the Christians obviously don't support this, but the governments are actually saying we've got to stop this, and they're working against them. Now, Christians don't believe in magic. And so our normal response to witches is actually just not even to worry about them. And so the normal historical response that Christians have had when a village becomes a Christian village is that they actually don't go to the witch doctor anymore. It's not that they go and burn his house down, they just don't even worry about him anymore. They pray to God now when they want help rather than turning to the witch doctor. Now that of course has not always been the case, and so I need to balance this out the other way. There have been times when Christian leaders have gone beyond this, and no doubt they felt that they were trying to protect people, but they have burned and persecuted innocent women and men and made them to suffer terribly. But I do want you to see the other side of it as well. There has been terrible persecution against witches, but Christianity in no way started that. The killing of witches is something that happens wherever people believe in magic. Again, I'm not trying to excuse the behaviour of Christians in this area, but I am asking that you'll have a look at both sides and see the context in which these things were happening. Because one of the things that does happen in our society is that Christianity can be blamed for everything. We have to admit that. Yes, Christians have done things which are wrong and for which we must just apologise and never offer excuse. But we've got to be fair. There are also things where Christians are just blamed for it. No matter what it is, Christianity is to blame. So the problem with the environment, Christianity is to blame, the Christian attitude to the environment. Adolf Hitler, Christianity is to blame. And so you can track down things to say it's Adolf Hitler. Even though the man himself and the philosophies he taught were quite atheistic, he still had to deal with the church because that's where people were going. It's Christianity which will be seen as the source of this. Or the corruption in the Western world. You'll have it even going the other way, where people say, well, the corruption in the Western world is from Christianity. Western European imperialism is from Christianity. It was interesting that on October 24, 2006, the British Broadcasting Commission, the BBC, one of the world's major news broadcasters, actually admitted that they have a bias against Christianity. Which is amazing, isn't it, for the largest news broadcaster to actually come out and say that. It was October 2006. You can Google it and find it. Because we need to say that there is this there. If you're not a Christian, I just want you to understand this as well. I'll give you an example. So the Dalai Lama is opposed to abortion and opposed to homosexuality. In his book, Beyond Dogma, he sets out his reasons for being opposed to it. Yet how many people take him to task for this? There is a big difference, isn't there? When the Pope or when Christians say this, they're fundamentalist, they're bigots, they're opposed to women's rights. When the Dalai Lama says it, well, we just don't mention that. See, there is a difference. That's all I'm trying to say here. There is a definite difference. And the way that Christianity is portrayed, sometimes it has legitimately done what's wrong, but other times it's not. I'm not saying we're innocent. I'm just saying please get the whole picture, because Christians actually have done some things that are good. We actually have done some things that are good. Could I have the next quote, please? The next big one on slavery? No. The other one? That's it there. This is by Rodney Stark, a sociologist. It says, although it's been fashionable to deny it, anti-slavery documents began to appear in Christian theology soon after the decline of Rome, and were accompanied by the eventual disappearance of slavery in all but the fringes of Europe. This is medieval, so this is like the 4th, 5th, 6th century. When Europeans subsequently instituted slavery in the New World, they did so over strenuous papal opposition. That is, that the Roman Catholic Church strenuously opposed it. A fact that was conveniently lost from history until recently. Finally, the abolition of New World slavery was initiated and achieved by Christian activists. Christians were involved in that. They were involved in the abolition of slavery. They were at the cutting edge of it, even though it is not fashionable to say that. It was Christians, and actually the group who was also involved with slavery, who set up the RSPCA, even though people want to try to take that away from us. Christians have been at the forefront of education, hospitals, and service to the poor. You may think that it's bad behaviour for us to be opposed to abortion, but we have our reasons for that. And we've also been opposed to alcohol abuse, pornography, defending of marriages and families, and opposing gambling. When I was much younger, in the 1980s, I can remember the fights that were happening in our community as casinos were starting to be built. You've got to realise that for most of Australia's history, the only casino was actually in Hobart. No one else in Australia was allowed to have a casino. You weren't allowed to have many forms of gambling. And it was only in about the 1980s when gambling came about en masse in the way that we know it now. Until that, there was no Sydney casino, no Melbourne casino. Now everyone's got one. But they had to fight to get that. They had to fight the Christians. People tend to forget that now. In fact, other people are now starting to realise that the whole gambling industry isn't so great after all. Christians have done some good things. And what I'm asking you to do is have a look at both sides of it. In fact, one of the reasons I became a Christian was because of the behaviour of Christians. The Christians that I experienced, I found convincing and authentic. I want to finish up now by my third point, the bad behaviour in Jesus. There was one quote which I haven't got up there, but it was a quote by someone who said that the problem with Christianity is that too many Christians don't behave in a Christ-like manner. And I think in many ways that comment really hit the nail on the head. The problem with Christianity is that Christians don't behave in a Christ-like manner. And it is completely understandable that someone who experiences wicked behaviour from Christians is going to doubt Christianity and be hurt by it. That is completely understandable. But I need to tell you that I am a sinner. I'm a sinner. I have failed as a Christian. I remember one day at work where I had the reputation of being the Christian evangelist going around, inviting everyone to church, going around defending Christianity, going around doing all those types of things at work, that one day in the staff room, everyone was just talking freely and I began to gossip about a certain person. And one of my work colleagues looked at me and said, "You shouldn't be doing that because you're a Christian." And I was exposed as a hypocrite by my workmates. But my failure does not make Jesus' teaching false. My failure does not make Jesus' teaching false. When Christians fail, it doesn't make the gospel false. Here, we've got that next this verse for you here. If we claim to be without sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. This is what the Bible says to Christians and to everyone. If we claim to be without sin, we deceive ourselves. And what I've been trying to do today is just to say that I am not without sin. The church is not without sin. We don't want to try to deceive you into thinking that we're this holy group that's above everyone else. We're not claiming that we haven't sinned. And I hope today that you've been able to accept something of the apology that I've been able to give. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. I guess the worst thing, though, about Christians behaving badly is that it makes people disregard Jesus. And this is sad because we actually all need Jesus. We need him because we all sin. We all behave badly. And that's actually why Jesus came. It says, if we claim to be without sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just, and will forgive us our sins and purify us from all unrighteousness. This is why we're holding these meetings. We want to admit that we've done the wrong thing as Christians, but we want to say to you, please forgive us and see past us to look at what Jesus has done for you. For when he died on the cross, he's actually done a great thing for us. He's brought about forgiveness of sins between us and God. Forgiveness of sins that we all need. And that's what we want to, as Christians, try to show you. Okay, I'll finish up there. Hand back to Patrick.
Thanks for coming, guys. If you've got any questions, I think Sam will be able to answer them now. So if you've written down any questions on your piece of paper.
Okay, so the question is, the Bible doesn't speak directly about gambling.
As far as I know.
As far as you, yep. And so should Christians be opposed to it? Well, historically they certainly have been, though how that works itself out may vary from time to time. The main grounds that Christians have had for being opposed to gambling is that it's destructive to people's lives, and so anything that they see as destructive, they say we should be against that. And so they see, and there's ample evidence of the destructiveness of gambling and the organised crime that comes with it. So that would be the main reason there. And then the other one is that it fosters greed. And so it promotes an attitude of, I don't have to work to get this. I can be greedy and get it some other way. And so the idea of fostering greed in people and the destructiveness, they've been the two sort of key reasons. And I think there's good grounds in the Bible for both of those, though, you know, you won't find a particular verse saying don't gamble, but you do get plenty of verses about don't do it, it's destructive, and don't be greedy. Yes? Okay, so there's a verse in the Old Testament which says that the only way to earn to get money is to either earn it or to inherit it. And so, yeah, absolutely. And so you're absolutely right. In the book of Proverbs, there's lots of things about if you want money, go and work hard. Get out there and work.
What about, in that case, charitable organisations?
Yeah. Well, charitable organisations who give it to the poor. So that is another way you can get it as well, giving it to the poor. So you may be on the receiving end of it at some
stage.
That's
not inheritance or working for, really.
You're right. This is why we need to have the discussion, because we can pull out these different aspects here. And you're absolutely right. There is the giving of alms, the giving to the poor as well. I think the word inheritance is slightly different to that. But I think there is just the place for a gift. You can get something just by a gift as well. But certainly Tiani's point is valid, that the Bible does say that for your normal way of getting things, you should go and work.
It does promote
charity. No, absolutely. Yeah. But it's not saying that you should aim to be receiving from other people in that.
It does promote the
giving. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so I've been making a number of apologies today, but don't we need to make a division between the representatives and the leaders of the church in particular who have done these things compared to the church in general?
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not convinced. I understand your point, and in one sense we can divide off the leaders and say the leaders have done that, but in another sense we're all in it together, and what one person does influence the rest and does have an effect on the rest. And so there is a place in which, whether we like it or not, we're associated with other people in the church that we may not agree, and we're all just, you know, as the church, as the Christians, we are all one group in one sense. So you can look at it in a divided way, but you've also got to look at it in a holistic way, and I've just tried to look at it in a holistic way as best I can. So Christianity is blamed for capitalism through the Protestant work ethic. I haven't done a lot of work on this. So does anyone else here know much about this? The Protestant work ethic? Mike? Okay, so I'll just try to repeat that a bit. To some degree, yes, we want to say that Christianity and capitalism are linked and that one did lead to another in various ways. But that when capitalism had a Christian backbone to it, where it wasn't driven by greed, that's not a bad thing. And it allows people to be mobile within in a society. And go to speak to Michael. Go and speak to Michael Lynch if you want a better explanation. Okay, thanks, Mike. Okay, so the point is, the question that's been raised is it really fair to say that Christianity is pulled up on certain issues like the homosexuality and abortion issue, while other people aren't, and that really that's to be expected because you're the major group around? Yeah. I guess what I think is, though, that the Dalai Lama is pretty major. When he came here, he absolutely packed the Stanley Burberry. Absolutely packed it. He goes around Australia packing the place. I don't think he's a minor figure. I think he is a major world stage figure, and that who's opposed to abortion. And yeah, so
in terms of world history and so on, I would say Christianity has a much bigger impact in terms of us, we've got a deep root sense of that ingrained to us with Dalai Lama, his sort of a bit newer perspective.
So so now you're saying not just now where we are now, but you're saying throughout history.
Yeah, Christianity has always played a fairly big part in, I think, tradition. And, I said, there are churches, multiple churches in most towns of Australia, so it's part of city planning.
Yeah. It's certainly true that Christianity has got a long history and has been involved in a whole range of ways, and I'm not saying that it shouldn't be open to criticism. I'm not saying that at all. I guess my point was, with the examples that I gave, was that there are other significant world stage people who are saying the same thing and they're not picked up for it. And so I guess I'm not looking at that historical point of view, and I'm just looking at what's happening now, the debate as it happens now, that you can have two world figures saying the same thing and yet it's this one, it's the Pope in particular, who would be picked up while the Dalai Lama wouldn't be.
Look,
Christianity is a more bold religion. The Buddhists are pretty bold. They've got their own school at our university. They've got their idol set up across the road. They're making big Buddhism was a missionary religion long before Christianity existed, and has been an active missionary religion and still is, and it is in our university at the official academic level. Yeah. So how does the Dalai Lama put it out? Well, it's certainly in his book.
Yeah, because that obviously makes a degree, as opposed to if you were to say, to make a press statement, say, I disagree with homosexuality and abortion, that would obviously probably get a bit more attention.
Yes, it may well. Yeah. So if he was to come out and make... I mean, look, his book is... It's a public book. It was in an interview that he did and then was turned into a book. So he's doing it publicly. Yes, certainly the church is more concerned at, it would seem, at the rights of unborn children, and that's, they make more noise. But I think my point still remains that he's made public statements about it, and people just don't pick that up as much. Like, they don't seem to, I've never really seen it picked up.
Just to put these into context, just since you place a lot of points in putting your own stance in context, or Christianity's stance in context, what is the Dalai Lama's approximate backup for his dislike of homosexuality and abortion? So what sort of reasoning does he
I'm not going to go into that, but I can tell you it's his book called Beyond Dogma, and it's excellent in that it has one sentence questions and then about a six sentence paragraph answer to what he says to it. And so you just flick through and you can find the question very quickly, and you can find it there. He sees it as against nature. Yeah, and he sees that abortion is killing a life, and as Buddhists are meant to be vegetarian, according to him, to be killing an unborn child, of course, is horrendous. And so you shouldn't be doing that. Okay, look, we'll finish up there. Sorry, one more question at the back. Yep.
When you're talking about witches before Christianity, burning witches and all the other religions going this way, from this, though, is what prompted the proof was that they were actually witches? Yeah. Or were they just burning people accused of being a witch?
Yeah, and that was why I apologised, because it was abused, and it was a horrendous situation to even be doing that. And you're absolutely right, that type of injustice where innocent people who may have just been trying to get herbs and spices from the garden to try to get themselves better were accused of being witches, that's just outrageous, and for that we need to apologise. My point was that I was just trying to make in that section that Christianity did not start the killing of witches, and that is how it is perceived in the popular mind. No, and I didn't ask it to be excused. I was asking for both sides to be understood and to put witchcraft in its world context, not just as a thing that Christians do. Because that is how it's perceived. It's perceived as like, how many people know what's happening in India? How many people know what's happening in Africa? That doesn't come up in the sociology class. It's Christianity. This is where it is. And I'm just saying, let's look at the whole world picture. For the Christian involvement, I want to apologise and say to be doing that to people is horrendous. But I want to put it in its world context and say it's happening around the world today, not by Christians, and that just needs to be part of the picture. You just can't say Christians burn witches. Unless you're going to say Hindus burn witches. Hindus, unless you say, you know, people in Papua New Guinea kill witches. You know what I mean? Like, why just pick out this one? That's my point. So I'm not trying to excuse what we did. I'm just asking for balance on the whole thing. Look, we've got some great food up the back, so please go up now, and thanks for coming today. Yeah.